As we mark the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II, we spent some time this week talking with Hawaii's first governor of Japanese descent. Governor George Ariyoshi is in his 90s, but remains active. He remains connected to the East-West Center, which is dedicated to strengthening ties across the Pacific. Those relationships so important as tensions in the Indo-Pacific are strained. Ariyoshi recalled when he was a teenager, a sophomore at McKinley High School, when Pearl Harbor was bombed. He would later be drafted in the military to serve our country.
And one of the first things that they did was issue a decree saying that everybody had to be off the street by 6 o'clock. That means there's a 6 o'clock curfew. My curfew was not 6 o'clock. My mother was very concerned that I may be out late, but she told me my curfew is 5 o'clock, and I'm sure to be home when we had to be. And because of the curfew, I never had any evening functions at McKinley. So my children have a harder time believing that I never went out at night.
Well, maybe now with our current situation with COVID and all the restrictions, that they can appreciate, you know, what life was like at that time.
Yes, that's right.
Where did you live at the time?
I lived in Chinatown on Smith Street. And because my father was a stevedore, it was very convenient to be there. But when the war broke out, because my father was an alien, he could not work at a stevedore. And we could not live where we were in Chinatown on Smith Street. And we were evacuated. We were told we had to get out of the area. We were too close to the waterfront.
Where did you move to?
To Manoa. My cousins had a farm out in Manoa. So I became a farm boy during my high school years.
And do you remember what you were doing on December 7th?
I was in Japanese school. I was going to Japanese school, so that Sunday I went to Sunday school. One of the things we did in Sunday school was get there early so we can play ping pong. So we got there early to play ping pong, and I did not know about the attack in Pearl Harbor. Till about 10 o'clock when I got home. On my way home, I saw one place on School Street that was shattered, and I did not realize that it was because a bomb was dropped there. But when I got home, my mother was very concerned, and she was happy that I was back home, and she had a bag prepared for each of us. And in the bag, she had the strap, food and water in case something happened where we had to go somewhere else, you know. I graduated from McKinley High School, and then when I was in, after that, I was called for military duty, and I entered service just as the war in Europe was coming to an end. And then I went to a basic training on the mainland, Camp Hood, Texas. And in the midst of my rich training, the war with the Pacific, with Japan, came to an end. And so what happened was they sent me from there to Minnesota right away. I didn't know what was going on. And I don't know how I got to Minnesota. And I was the only one from Camp Hood that was sent to Minnesota. When I got there, I was told that I was going to be part of the MIS, Military Intelligence Service, and that I was going to get my training there. So Fort Snelling, Minnesota, that's where I did finished my basic training. From there, I was sent to Japan as a member of the occupation forces. The first person Japanese that I really met was a Tushin boy, and I saw him, and I thought to myself, gee, why is he doing this? You know, so I asked him, how old are you? He said, he was 7 years old. Why are you doing this? And he said, seven-year-old child telling me, my country is hurting. My home is hurting. My family is hurting. And I need to help. That's why I'm doing this, making a few dollars that he can get. And I was very impressed that a seven-year-old child would think about his family, about his country, and do feel he had to make a contribution. So I went and I got a piece of bread. I put some jam on it, and I gave it to him. And immediately he put it away box, and I told him, oh, aren't you hungry? Aren't you going to eat it? He said, oh, I'm very hungry. I thank you very much, but I'm going to take this home, and I'm going to share this with Mariko. Who is Mariko? Mariko is my three-year-old sister, and I was really touched, very touched by this young person caring about his country and his family and taking a piece of bread, and he wants to take it home to share with his three-year-old sister. And I was very impressed. And that's when I felt, if he represents the Japanese feelings, Japan was going to make a very fast recovery from the war effort. And it was in the midst of it. When I got there, I was also learning about America's policy. Now, how MacArthur didn't want to punish Japan, but Japan, he wanted Japan to make a very rapid economic recovery. He wanted Japan to become a new nation, a democracy with a constitution, and he wanted that progress take place. Japanese were very, very grateful to him. They were grateful that he was not punishing them, grateful that he was wanted Japan to make a very rapid recovery, and they wanted, he was very, very anxious to also become the kind of nation that MacArthur wanted Japan to become. And I think if it's all put together with the spirit of that young man and the spirit of Japanese, Japan made a very rapid recovery. It became a democratic nation with a constitution, and as a result became America's greatest ally then and now and into the future. I think it's the greatest ally that can happen. I think that until that time, focus of America was over and across the Pacific, Asia and Europe, and they were not too much involved in Pacific and the small bilateral arrangements that were being entered into. But with Japan and America coming together, it now represented two major democratic nations, one a Western, one Eastern, coming together and looking at the whole, not just looking at America or Japan, but looking at how America and Japan could work, do things that would be good for the whole Pacific area. And so that U.S.-Japan relations now is very important, not to the countries, but beyond that to the region and to America, and also to Atlantic.
And what would you want your grandchildren and great-grandchildren to know about this period?
I think I want them to know that there was a very vicious war. America had never been involved in such a vicious war that made so much at stake. But two nations at war against each other, coming together. And I think my children, I want them to know that no matter what happens, friendship between nations become very important. No matter what happens and why we got, what would happen to that point, it is important we try at any point to develop this friendship in a worldwide basis. That's what I want to see happen. Friendship all over the world. And understanding the need for things to happen in order to make the friendship fashion. If America had not gone to war, ended the war, and conducted itself in the way that MacArthur and the Japanese, the American effort, the desire to have peace, desire to have a defeated nation get strong, rebuild, that the nation to become a democratic nation, a different kind of nation, and a friendship with the Constitution, the friendship developing between the two nations. That friendship is the most important thing that happened. Ambassador Mansfield talked about that, the most important bilateral relations born on between two nations. That's what happened. And that's what I want my children to know, that their future is important, and the future depends on what countries do. I think also that while the nations between, the relationship between Japan and America is very strong, and leaders come together, prime minister and president comes together, to me that's not enough. The people of both nations have got to feel this sense of friendship and the many bilateral relations that we create in America and every other state and Hawaii, between counties and between the state, to me is very important. The people in both nations can feel the importance of the Japan-U.S. alliance. Not just government, but the people itself also feel that alliance. One of the things I'm very grateful for is veterans who went to war and came back and didn't say, oh, we're going to bask in our glory. They came back and they look at, now look at Hawaii. They began to look at what kind of state they came back to. And they came back and found a lot of unfairness here in this community. And they participated in government and took over control of the legislature. For the first time in the history of the entire territory, we government was controlled, legislature controlled by the veterans. Democrats came back. They got me involved. I was one of the younger ones, but I had became the youngest member of that 1954 political revolution when we took over legislature for the first time. And what we did was we wanted to create fairness and equity for all the people of Hawaii. And if the government, the veterans, come back, had not participated, I do not know whether we would have been able to create that And Norway, Bak Matsunaga, Russell Kono, Masato Doi, very involved in that 1954 election. And I was the youngest member of that group. And we brought about and we created all the equalities in labor laws and land laws and housing laws, made it possible for Hawaii to be a fairer, a better place.
And that's how you believe it changed Hawaii?
Yes, different. Fighting the war, but coming back, fighting for justice and fairness in Hawaii.
And that was Governor George Ariyoshi reflecting about how World War II changed life here in the islands. Ariyoshi plans to be a part of the activities marking the anniversary of the end of the war next week. Because of COVID-19 and the recent surge in cases, a visit by a contingent of veterans from the U.S. has been canceled, but local veterans still plan to take part in a scaled-down commemoration. For links to what's planned, head to our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.